always do?
Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
It is Follow the Money, starring Mike Palm. I'm also here, Matt Eumanns, today. Mike and Matt, instead of Mitch and Paul, who are on vacation. The A-team gets the day off after the NBA season ends, Mike.
Yeah, they did yeoman's work all year following that every night. So one day for Mitch and a whole week for Paul.
A whole week for Paul?
Yeah, Paul's off all week.
Okay, he's probably on a beach somewhere because you know he loves to be out in the sun.
Yeah, if El Cortez has a beach.
Let's talk NBA since the season wrapped up last night. And Mike, we were talking about this off the air. Big swing last night in this game. Thunder Pacers, and Thunder obviously get to win 103-91 in the first NBA Finals Game 7 since 2016. What were the financial implications here at Circa Sports?
So it was always for the series, we always needed Oklahoma City because we had a couple, you know, tickets at 120-1, 100-1 that were bet on the Pacers during the course of the year. They cast the Eastern Conference. They also had them to win the whole thing. So we always knew we needed OKC to win it. But then the money came in on the Pacers, plus the 7.5 and plus the 7 yesterday. So it got to the point where the point spread itself was over $1 million swing.
Wow.
Was very fortunate for us that Halliburton goes down, because I think that would have come right down to the wire.
This number opened 8 at Circa, 8.5 some spots, closed 6.5 last night. And, Mike, we don't know how different the game might have been if Tyrese Halliburton didn't go down with that injury with just under 5 minutes to go in the first quarter last night. Blown Achilles. It's going to be a while before we see Halliburton back on the court, it would seem, if it is a blown Achilles. That was a report today. So how different do you think that game might have been? We can only speculate. But the Pacers were up 48-47 at halftime.
They were. But I think they just don't have the ball handling without him. And there was just too many empty possessions and turnovers in the second half. And then, you know, OKC'd get it up to 6 or 7. They'd make a run to tie it. But then it snowballed once it got to 9 and then 11. You know, and he called like 3 timeouts in a 6-minute span of game time. And it got away from him. I just think they wouldn't have had as many empty trips. I don't know if they win that game, but I think they were a good shot of covering the 7 or 7.5.
That's actually exactly what I said last night, is the Pacers were probably not going to win a game with Halliburton. But they might have covered the 8, 7 or 8, whatever you bet it at. If you bet the dog in that game last night, it might have been a different point spread result. But that's, anyway, speculation. You don't know, but Halliburton was hot. He was a hot shooter early in the game. He had 3 3-pointers. And T.J. McConnell tried to carry the Pacers later in the game, but Indiana offense just died in the third quarter. And that's where I thought the series pretty much ended in the third quarter last night, Mike. It was tied at 56. After Miles Turner hit a 3, I think with about 8:30 to go. And at that point, the Thunder responded with 3 threes in a row to go up 65-56. T.J. McConnell scored 12 straight points for the Pacers. But he was the only Pacer who scored for about a 12-minute stretch of the game clock. And that can't happen. The Pacers just ran out of gas on the offensive end of the floor last night. And T.J. McConnell finished with a 16. Benedict Mathurin with 24, but the Pacers didn't have enough horses to run with the Thunder there in the third and fourth quarter last night. They go down by 12. I also want to talk about the live betting implications of the total, Mike, because you do a lot of live betting. Yeah. And we were watching a game in San Diego last night. Mitch Moss was with us, as a matter of fact. And when Halliburton went down with the injury, the first thing we were thinking is bet under the total live. And at that point, the live total was still around 217. It kept dropping, 207, 205, 202, 198. If you were betting under the total pretty much every chance you got last night, seeing that the Pacers didn't have as many offensive options, that the game was slowing down, because Halliburton out there, he's a lot of times trying to push the pace for the Pacers. The game was definitely slowing down. You could see it turning into a bit of a grind. Did you do any live betting under the total after that Halliburton injury happened late in the first quarter?
No, I didn't. I bet it pregame only because of the trends with Game 7, yeah. And I really wasn't. But we lost to that at the book here. We won about every way you could, but we lost to the live betting because of the total. Because guys were consistently, and we're often on the commercial breaks, not live the whole time as some are, consistently betting the under last night. So we lost a little chunk of it back to the total.
What was the here's a tweet from Evan Abrams of the Action Network. Thunder just won the title after being favored in every playoff game and 78 of 82 regular season games. join the 2017 Warriors and 1996 Bulls to accomplish that feat in the last 30 years. That does not mean the Thunder are an all-time great team, but Mike, they put together a hell of a regular season, winning 68 games. They got pushed to seven games twice in the playoffs, once by the Nuggets, once by the Pacers, and I get the job done last night. I was going to ask you on the futures board for the whole season, because I know you mentioned, and I know a lot of bettors who had the Pacers about 100-1 or so. Did it turn out to be a positive result for you with the Thunder winning it, because the Thunder are lower odds pretty much the entire season?
Yeah, it did. The only hit we took on the Thunder was a guy in Colorado that bet $20,000 on him before the season started. And I don't know, it was 11 or 12 to 1 or something like that. It was some number, like he won almost $300,000. So maybe it was 13 to 1 or something. But that was it. That was the only big hit we took them. And to your point, they were so dominant early in the margin of victories in these games that their odds dropped so quickly. Nobody wanted. Who was going to lay? Who was going to bet them at less than 2 to 1, or who was going to bet them then with a minus in front of them to win it? Right. The people just shied away from it.
No, there was a lot of money on the Thunder in the futures market, but it was all at low prices, and that's never going to hurt you as a bookmaker. Let's talk about Tyrese Haliburton and the run. He took the Pacers on in the playoffs, hit the big shot against the Knicks, hit a big shot in game one against the Thunder, but the Pacers ran out of gas without him. And here's Rick Carlisle talking about the Tyrese Haliburton injury.
What happened with Tyrese is all of our hearts dropped, but he will be back. I don't have any medical information about what may or may not have happened, but he'll be back in time. And I believe he'll make a full recovery. So he authored one of the great individual playoff runs in the history of the NBA.
And so when Haliburton goes down with just under 5 minutes to go in the first quarter, Mike, what was your first thought? The Pacers are screwed, or the Pacers can overcome this because it's just a one-game situation. You know, for the next three quarters, they can cover for him. You lose your point guard, that's big. What were you thinking when he went down?
I texted my friend who's a professional bettor, this game is over. In terms of who's going to win it, the Thunder are going to win the game. I'm impressed, to your point. They hung in there and they played very well in the second quarter. But the turnovers just start to add up.
21 turnovers again last night for the Pacers.
But they come with the trap, and you know they're going to turn the ball over. It's like a high school game there. Mm-hmm. They couldn't right before the half, too. They got like a 3-for-1 because they were able to turn them over at half court. Yeah. I thought the Pacers might be up 4 or 6 at half and give them a little bit of room there. I think that happened in a game earlier in the playoff series and an earlier round with the OKC. You know, the impressive thing you put up about two thoughts. The impressive thing you put up is favored in 78 out of 82 regular season when people take so much time off with load management.
Sure.
Right? These are them and the Pistons went out and played hard every night. Right now, there were some games they sat people.
Cavaliers did too.
Yeah, but for the most part, those teams went out and their bettors are usually rewarded by it. The other thing we talk about this great run of Haliburton. If the Pacers had won, though, it's likely Siakam is the MVP of the series, as he was in the Eastern Conference. So you can talk about Haliburton put him on the back, but Siakam, through the course of all play on both ends of the court, was more valuable.
I agree with that. And actually, you know who was making a run at MVP if the Pacers could pull off the comeback last night? It was little T.J. O'Connell.
Yeah.
Again, he went over his points prop in all seven games of the NBA Finals. O'Connell with 16 last night on 8-for-13 shooting. Huh? T.J. McConnell? T.J. McConnell, not Aiden O'Connell. T.J. McConnell was 16 last night and didn't quite have enough support there in the third quarter when the Thunder blew the game open. And you could tell that was it at that point. Like you said, I had a similar thought when Haliburton went down with the injury. Pacers lose their point guards. They're not going to win the game. But they might still cover if you took the 7 or 8, whatever you took last night. And late in the third quarter when they fell down 22, you could tell they were probably not going to cover. They did cut it to 10 late and threatened to get in the back door, but it did not happen.
You know, they have to look back on the game they were up in Indianapolis where they're up 10 at the end of the third quarter.
Game four on Friday night.
On Friday night, we were in Omaha at the baseball game, and I'm following the game on my phone. And, I mean, to follow on your phone, you thought they were in control of the game the whole time. Siakam misses a free throw, and so it's 7 instead of 10 at the end of the third. And then they go on that 4.5-minute drought where they don't score, and they don't even cover the game. But, I mean, there was the title for them right there.
I said the same thing. They blew the series that night. Not just game 4. Yep. They blew the series on that Friday night when you're up 10 on your home floor And you got to close that out. And that's where I thought the Pacers lost the series. Now, it went seven, but that game four on that Friday night in Indianapolis is one they're going to regret for a long time. I believe you were on our show, VSiN Primetime, that night, and you were about 15 Jello shots deep at the time we talked to you.
I was with you and Tim.
That's right. Yeah. How many shots did you finish?
33 I ended up.
33 that night?
I don't know what all the final numbers were. I'm sure Wilbo probably won the thing. I mean, he went hard for 6 days. So you
beat Paul Howard 33-0.
Yeah. Also, in time seen, I beat him by about 48 hours in 3 days, too.
Well, it's going to be slow season now. Look at the book behind us. Mike, not a lot going on for the next 6 weeks or so.
No, we get into baseball.
We're going to talk a lot of baseball on the show today. We're also going to talk some college football. How about Bryan Edwards on his best bets in the SEC and elsewhere? Bryan Edwards, a very sharp college football capper, is going to be on with us here in about 20 minutes. Mike North, legend in Chicago sports radio.
Hotter than anybody picking baseball games. I've been following him for about a month now.
He has been on a roll betting baseball. And, he's a humble guy, but he'll probably brag about it a little bit when he comes on. Start hour number two with Mike North and Matt Moore recapping the NBA Finals. And we'll talk about the Kevin Durant trade and some odd timing about when that trade was announced on Sunday, right before NBA Finals Game 7. Bryan Edwards, Mike North, Matt Moore, Mike Palm, what else would you want? Quick break here on Follow the Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Mike Palm, Matt Eumanns here. Follow the Money on a Monday. NBA season is history. And, Mike, we talked about it right before the break. You look behind us in the book. Plenty of good seats available. It's not going to be standing room only until sometime in late August, I guess, when we get opening weekend of college football.
Yeah, there's nothing.
It's not much.
I'm trying to think of something on his
It's going to be the Hall
UFC,
of Fame.
If you get a UFC card, bring some people out. But
British Open.
Well,
UFC.
Those are odd hours, too.
I know. We're going to have the Hall of Fame game at the end of July, NFL preseason, college football. It's going to be a slow time. But you know what I think is going to dominate the conversation, at least around here, is going to be football contest signups. And we're going to get an update on that from you later in the show. But actually, the contest signups have been rolling in every day. You've got proxy set up out here in a booth. And they've been busy. I've noticed every day we're in here, the proxies are doing signups.
Yeah, Tom Carroll and his son are there every day. But Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, you have three or four different proxies set up. And they just keep doing appointments, turning them over. Survivor went over 1,000 on Friday. It's pacing very well. I wouldn't be shocked at all if we got to 20 million there. I just think the momentum of that contest and people... You did three entries last year and you got knocked out. People mostly come back and they do five or they add another entry. We'll be in the same boat with the millions. It'll be right around 6 million. And then Grandissimo, who knows? Who wants to tie up 100,000 for 4 months? So I don't think you'll know anything about that till a week before the season kicks off.
That's the same thing I said when you announced it. I said all those entries are going to come in the last week.
Has to be.
Right?
Are you tying up 100,000 for 4 months?
No.
I know Ian Ritchie did it, but that was a whole thing, and he came on Visa and got to promote his fantasy stuff.
The only reason you would enter that contest early is to promote it for marketing reasons, to throw it up on Twitter, say, hey, look, I'm in this contest, and make yourself look like a major player, right?
And that's why he did it, and good for him. Mm-hmm. And he got a platform, and it helps us get the momentum rolling.
So you got one entry. We'll get to more of the football contest talk later in the show. Got a good baseball card tonight, Mike. We got to break down some baseball games here. And I think maybe the most attractive game on the card tonight would be Yankees-Reds. I'll talk about that one a little bit later. But right under that on the rotation, 9-17, 9-18, Mike Palm is bold. He's going to go step out with the Chicago White Sox today. How'd you handicap this game and end up on the White Sox at about, plus 130?
I 128. The team has been playing better than the results would indicate, I would tell you. I watched every bit of that doubleheader they had on Thursday against St. Louis because of the rainout. They should have won both of those games. They ended up losing both of them, and all of a sudden, oh, my God, they're a seven-game losing streak, and here we go again. They go right up to Toronto and drill Toronto on Friday night, come back and win yesterday to win this series, and now they go home. It's not a long trip, and you get the D-backs coming in. Eduardo Rodriguez has been nothing special at all this year, and if you look inside the metrics of these numbers, I mean, Shane Smith's actually had a better year than Rodriguez. You get the White Sox at home with a little momentum here at a plus price. Take a small shot on him.
White Sox, I was impressed by what they did in Toronto after they lost that series to the Cardinals, went up and beat the Blue Jays 7-1, took 2 out of 3 in that series. And again, the White Sox, not going to set the world on fire, but a 25-53, way ahead of last year's pace.
They got the Colorado to take all the attention off of them. By the way, in the game that they lost on Saturday, I mean, Savali gave up 4 runs the first 2 innings, and they played that game basically even the rest of the way. How does Savali look? Complaining about that kid that almost threw a perfect game in Minnesota, taking his spot in the rotation. Sure. That kid's got dynamite stuff. He's throwing 102 with a slider at 96.
He hasn't been around long, but he's made a big impression. And I think that was what night was that? Thursday night where he flirted with the perfect game.
Perfect through six.
Yeah,
and then he went walk homer, and then they got him out of there in the seventh. But they gave him a shot at least.
All right, so that's one. That's going to be one of your in-pocket plays today,
yes,
right? The White Sox plus. How about Brandon Woo and the Mariners on the road at Minnesota? We were just talking about the Twins. Yeah. Are you going to play? There's a lot of steam here on the Seattle side since last night. Open at once some spots around minus 115 up to 135. Where did you get it?
122. Thinking about maybe even playing the run line tonight with them. There's been something wrong with Bailey Ober since the opening start of the year where he couldn't get out of the first inning, said he had food poisoning.
You ever had food poisoning? How many times
in my life?
Yeah,
a couple times. Where you're sick for 3 days and you can't keep anything down.
Yeah. Had it twice. It's been probably 15 years, so it's been a long time.
You're running good then.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a lot of opportunities for it. It's not like you're preparing meals and you can control everything.
It's not like that.
I like Brian Woo a lot. The kid doesn't walk anybody. He might turn out to be the best starter on that staff. Kirby has not been great since he came back from the injured list. But I want to fade Ober. I don't know if Baldelli's going to keep pitching to Cal Raleigh like he did when they were out in Seattle. I mean, they just keep pitching to this guy, and he just keeps – I mean, he hit the ball off the space needle against them when they were out there last time.
31 home runs for Cal Raleigh.
How about that? I like the Mariners for a lot of reasons. I said on Friday night, it was Friday night the kid pitched in.
Okay.
Because I text Mitch Moss.
I was in here doing a show when it was happening.
I text Mitch Moss, and I said, you might want to get this kid for National League Rookie of the Year. When the game started, he was 10-1, and he was 2-1 by the time he got pulled. I got him at 7-1 after the third inning. But he said he didn't know. I said, go back and watch the tape of the game. But I said to my friend also who's a Twins fan, I said, the Twins are going to get swept this weekend. They're just so far off the map, and all these teams, the Brewers are the antithesis of them. They come in there, they steal everybody. You get a runner on first, they send everybody. The Twins don't do anything. They don't manufacture any runs. I think this is going to be a long homestand. That 13-game winning streak, they're 37 and 40, and they had that 13-game win streak. Think about that. They're 24 and 40. That was the outlier, the win streak. Mm-hmm. This is not a good team.
All right, so minus 122 on Seattle.
Yes, sir.
You know, I've noticed in the last week, there's been some big moves on Mariners games in the market. Brian Woo, if you look at him right now through 14 starts, you've got a pitcher with a whip under 1, 0.94, ERA of 3.12. Pretty solid numbers across the board. I got to ask you your betting strategy here with MLB. Do you split your unit first 5 in game? Sometimes you just play first 5? How are you playing these? You playing full games?
I'm playing full games. I only play first 5 if I really hate the bullpen of a team. But if the bullpen's really bad, you're playing a good premium. I mean, these numbers are priced very well when people are trying to get away from it. If I play total, though, Matt, since they still have these dumb automatic runners at second base, they're not ghost runners. They're automatic runners. I hate that. I don't know why Manfred didn't get rid of it. I very rarely play full game totals because I fear to God they're going to go 2-2 into extra innings and it ends up 8-6.
Right.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen. Doesn't happen often, but you've seen it happen. So you still hate that extra innings?
It's ridiculous. It was a COVID rule.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you have a 162-game season, you don't need those 17, 18-inning games.
They're not
going to
get those anyhow. The bullpens are so bad, they can't hold teams scoreless.
All right, so let's talk about Yankees-Reds.
There you go.
Yankees 3-7 in the last 10. They did win the last two over the weekend. And they go to Cincinnati to open this series, Mike. And the starter for the Yankees, I had to do some research on Allen Winans.
How about this AAA numbers? This kid's got incredible AAA numbers.
He does, but it's interesting. This is not AAA anymore. No. When you're pitching in Cincinnati and it's hot and you got a good Reds lineup you're going to be facing. Allen Winans is going to make his first start for the Yankees. He's going to replace Ryan Yarbrough, the tall lefty who went to the injured list. So it's interesting. Aaron Boone was hyping up what Winans has been doing at AAA Scranton-Wilkes-Barre. Okay. And the numbers are impressive. It makes you think, hey, maybe we got a sleeper here. At AAA, Winans has an ERA of 0.90 in 11 games, 9 starts, 59 strikeouts, and 50 innings with a 1.04 whip. Now, when you look at his stuff, and this is interesting. See, I'm intrigued by this game because I think the Reds should be able to hit this kid. Hmm. He's got a changeup, a sinker, a slider, but a four-seam fastball that really tops out at about 90 miles an hour, Mike. So he's not going to overpower any hitters here. And in AAA, he's been, I'd say, clever. He's put together a good season. But when you look at Winans over his career, 8 starts with the Braves in 20 and 23, 23 and 24, he had an ERA of 7.20. He did have one great start against the Mets at Citi Field, August 2023, 7 shutout innings. The Mets were the team that originally drafted Winans, and he went back to Citi Field and shut him down in that game. But he has not made a big league appearance since July of 2024. He was knocked out in the third inning of a start against the Reds.
So how are you going to play it? You get to go first 5 over? You're going to take the Reds as a home dog?
No, I'm thinking about playing the Reds as a home dog and possibly first 5 over the total. That's one play I'm considering on tonight's card because I would think the Reds should be able to hit Winans. All right, how about the VSiN NFL betting guide? I'm working on it right now pretty much every night. We're trying to crank this thing out within the next week or two. If you want to bet smarter this football season, VSiN Pro can help you start strong. The NFL betting guide drops next week. Early access means a better shot at spotting the value in the futures markets before the lines move. It's a perfect time to join with our football special. Just $175 for full VSiN Pro access from today through the Super Bowl. That's a hell of a deal. Every sport we cover, every day, at a special early bird price. Go to vsin.com/subscribe now. Lock in the football special for just $175. vsin.com/subscribe. You get a full year of Mike Palm with that. $175. We come back, you're going to get Brian Edwards on college football best bets.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
All right, welcome back. Mike Palm, Matt Youmans here on Follow the Money. And let's go out to Progressive Guest Line right now and dial up Brian Edwards, Vegas Insider Handicapper, MajorWager.com, and we're going to talk some college football. Mike, I don't know how much college football work you do at this point in the summer. Much at all?
Not too much, I have to admit.
That's fine. We got the VSiN college football betting guide coming out probably in late July, so we haven't even put that together. The NFL magazine is first. There's a lot more research to do on college football now more than ever with all the transfers. Brian Edwards is always on top of it. Edwards, let's start in the SEC with your Florida Gators. And I know you've got a game of the year that you love on the Gators. You've got a bunch of bets you love on the Gators. So let's go ahead and start with the team in your backyard.
Yeah, I like the Gators. 8-5 last year, kind of turned the corner, got Napier momentarily off the hot seat with that 4-game winning streak to end the season. DJ Lagway's stats weren't spectacular, but his NFL arm talent is, and they bring back a lot of guys, and I like them over 7.5, which you can probably get in the +110 to +120 range. Phil Steele's national unit ranking have them top 25 at every position group, number 5 in the O-line, number 10 at quarterback, which I don't think is high enough. They've got good special teams, and you look at the schedule. And it's not easy by any means, but it's not as hard as last year. And a lot of the teams are breaking in new quarterbacks. Outside of LSU, pretty much everybody is breaking in a new quarterback. I like them to make the CFP at +420 odds. And I love them -3 against Tennessee games of the year, as Florida is 17-3 straight up, 15-5 ATS in the last 20 against Tennessee. They get that one at home, and I think that number's way too short.
Brian Edwards, follow him at Vegas B. Edwards. And Edwards, you know, we've been very critical of Sunbelt Billy Napier, and the Gators kind of turned this thing around a little bit last year. Do you think it's your optimism here on Florida? Is it mostly about the recruiting classes? Is a lot of it about DJ Lagway, the quarterback? Where does it come from? Because it feels like the attitude towards this Florida team has changed quite a bit with what happened late last season.
Yeah, I think it's Lagway. Getting Eugene Wilson back from a season-ending injury last year. He led them in receiving yards in 2023 as a true freshman. Adding two five-star freshmen at the wide receiver position, including Dallas Wilson, who had three touchdown catches in the spring game. And just accumulation of talent. I still don't like Napier as an in-game coach, but kids play hard for him, and he's recruited pretty well.
Yeah, he's a knucklehead as an in-game coach, but Florida in a much better position as a program than it was about a year ago at this time. How about that October 4th game in the Swamp, Edwards? Arch Manning and the Texas Longhorns against the Gators and DJ Lagway. That's going to be, I think, a big game in the Heisman Trophy race.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm I like Lagway. If you can get him, you know, 18-20-1, shop around to win the Heisman. And at last look, Florida was catching 7.5 at DraftKings in games of the year. And I do like them in that game against Texas. Yeah, going to be a good one. That'll be Arch Manning, what, let's see, how many rows? That'll be, well, they have it at Ohio State, so it'll be his second career road start. But tough environment for a young quarterback.
Brian, I want to ask about Illinois. Because it looks like you're taking a double bite at them, both over 7.5 and over 8.5 at a plus number. I know they get Altmyer back. They finished strong, played well against South Carolina in that bowl game. Bielema really got in their heads. No Penn State, no Oregon, no Michigan. Let me ask you this. I circle four games on their schedule. At Indiana, at Washington, at Wisconsin, and versus Ohio State in Champaign. Will they be favored in any of those games?
I think they'll be favored at Washington. They've got 2 weeks to prepare for that one, and Washington does not. Washington is actually at Michigan on the other side of the country the week before. So even though they have to go out west for that one, it's somewhat of a favorable spot having 2 weeks to prepare. I really like Altmyer a lot, 22-6 TDI and T ratio. They've got their top five tacklers back and nine starters back on a defense. They only gave up 21.7 points per game. They've got a good running back. They've got all five starting O-linemen back. They're good in the trenches, and the schedule works. You know, I think they're going to win all those home games in Big Ten play with the exception of Ohio State. I marked them 8-2 with two swing games, the swing games being at Duke and at Wisconsin, and the two losses being Ohio State at home and at Indiana, but they can win at Indiana. But, yeah, I think they win nine, and they won nine last year in the regular season, and a lot of that nucleus coming back.
So keep it in the Big Ten here. So you're playing Illinois over 7.5, over 8.5. Did you all? You also played the Indiana Hoosiers, and a bunch of us made this bet on Indiana a year ago, but that win total was 5.5. And, Brian, you're not buying low on the Hoosiers anymore.
No, you're not, but look, it's nothing fluky about last year. They only had one possession game. They won that against Michigan, but they were up 14 at halftime in that game. They had 10 wins by margins of 14 points or more. I think the schedule worked. I've got them marked 9-2 with one swing game. I've got them losing at Oregon, at Penn State, and I've got the swing game being at Iowa. Now I have them beating Illinois at home. But really just look at the Illinois and at Iowa, and I'll just call that a split. And so that would, you know, that would have them 9-3. So I like it over 8.5, and you can get plus money on that at some book.
Mike Palm, look at this Indiana Hoosiers non-conference schedule here. Not exactly lining up the Titans. Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, and Indiana State. After you make a college football playoff run, seriously, that's your non-conference schedule?
Well, they did this years ago, didn't they?
Indiana's been doing this forever, right? Trying to win six games to get bowl eligible. But you don't have to do that now. You got a better team. You got a better coach, better program. Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, and Indiana State. Come on.
Well,
step it up a little bit.
Next year. They'll step it up next year.
Okay. It can't get much worse than that. Brian Edwards, what are your thoughts on Alabama? Because I know some people love the Tide, think they might be a little bit overrated, or excuse me, a little bit underrated, undervalued in the market. I sense that you think Alabama might be a little bit overrated. What's your take here?
Yeah, I think, you know, the jury's out on Ty Simpson. We don't know. We haven't seen him play enough. Look, they've got good talent, but that thing was kind of unraveling late last year. I mean, you get killed by three touchdowns at Oklahoma in a game you had to have to make the CFP. They were favored by 14 in that game. And then Michigan, pretty much their JV squad, all of Michigan's best players had opted out of the bowl game. And at one point late in the second quarter, Alabama had more turnovers than total yards. So, you know, maybe Ryan Grubb, the OC, who initially went to Tuscaloosa with DeBoer, but then took the Seahawks OC job. Now he's back. They're hoping he'll be the, you know, the magic ingredient that was missing last year. But, I mean, I've got questions at the quarterback position and just where they are with team chemistry after such a dynastic run under Saban.
Tennessee, Florida -3 versus Tennessee is your favorite game of the year at this point. Edwards, we got a little less than 2 minutes to go. You want to run down some of your other best bets for the college football season? You've got a big list here.
Auburn +7 against Georgia. Auburn's got 2 weeks to prepare for that one. Nearly upset them at home 2 years ago. And Auburn's talent is going to be a lot better this year. We'll see on Jackson Arnold. He doesn't need to live up to the five-star billing he had coming out of high school. They've got a great receiving core and a really good O-line. If he's just, you know, a better than average SEC quarterback, Auburn should win about 8 games this year. And always tough at Jordan here. I like them +7 there. I like LSU +6.5 at Alabama. I like Georgia Tech +12.5 to Georgia. That one's not at Bobby Dodd. They're playing it at Mercedes-Benz where the Falcons play. Under Brent Key, Georgia Tech, 15-6 against the spread with 11 outright wins as an underdog. I'm also on Kentucky, +4.5. I like Vandy +5.5, +140. If you look at their schedule, there's a lot of winnable games on there. And I like Toledo +11.5 at Kentucky in week one.
Vegas B. Edwards, that's where you can follow him. He's got a long list of best bets there in college football. And sharp as it gets, especially in the SEC. Brian, I know you had a really good run handicapping the NBA. Hopefully, you finished the season on the winning side last night in Game 7 of the NBA Finals.
TJ McConnell over on point was very, very good to me. And, yeah, last night was good.
All right, Brian, appreciate catching up with you on college football. Thanks.
Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
TJ McConnell over his points prop in all 7 games of the NBA Finals. Mike Palm and I come back to talk some hockey.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
All right, we're back. NBA season's history. Stanley Cup final in the rearview mirror as well. And a little bit slow around the sportsbook today. But Mike Palm, affectionately call you a puckhead because you love hockey handicapping, hockey betting. You know hockey very well. There seem to be some split opinions on how Connor McDavid performed in the Stanley Cup final. And Edmonton Oilers 6-game loss to the Florida Panthers, who went back-to-back, took Oilers out in 7 a year ago, and 6 this time. McDavid had only 1 goal in the final. He had a handful of assists. Mike, what was your take on how you felt he performed overall in the 6 games?
Look, you know, you can isolate this, but in the games, he only had 1 bad game at home, Game 5.
That was a bad game for the whole team.
Yeah, and it's the biggest game of the season.
It is.
But think about the games in Florida. Outside of that comeback that they had, in game four in Florida. They've only scored one goal or less in five of six games in Florida, Edmonton.
Right.
Paul Maurice has done a great job with the last change of being able to match up that Barkov line against the McDavid line, right? And has really, for the most part, taken him out of it. I don't know how you can complain about him. This team was dominant against the Knights. Dominated the Knights there. Yeah. They were more dominant against the Stars than the Panthers were against the Hurricanes in the conference finals. And they run into this team. They take them to seven games last year and six games this year. And I hear all, blow it up. We got it. Come on. You've been up against a really good team that's made three straight cup finals that can play any style they want to. You need a little bit of an elevation at goalie, probably, and maybe some more scoring depth on a second line. But I wouldn't blow it up at all if I was Edmonton.
Not when you're that close. You can't blow it up. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on this as well, because we talked about what moves could the Oilers make in the offseason to get them over the top next year if they run into the Florida Panthers again. Probably not going to be a third year in a row we see that final matchup. But where were the edges? Florida had the much better defense, right? Suffocating defense. I think Florida's got a significant coaching edge over Edmonton.
Absolutely.
And the goalie edge is significant, too. So if you're running the franchise, you're running the show in Edmonton, what do you change? Do you change the coach? You upgrade the goalie? Yeah. Is that where you start?
It's very hard to change the coach when he takes you to two cup finals. We would here. I mean, we might do it in Vegas.
Sure.
Because Bill Foley is that guy, right? He's going to make changes, and it doesn't matter necessarily what's happened in the past.
Did McDavid make some comments that you found interesting?
About the coach
when he said, we kept doing the same thing over and over again and banging our head against the wall. Uh-huh. I think that was an indictment of the coach.
Well, sure it was.
Huh?
Sure it was. And I also thought this the whole series, and you saw Florida was very good in the faceoff circle. They were encroaching their wingers, and the refs weren't calling it. And I don't know why Edmonton wasn't complaining about it. Every big faceoff, they were moving at the time that the puck was dropped.
Right.
And they should have been given warnings, and they weren't. I didn't think it was a particularly well-coached series at all by Edmonton. And I guess if there's something, the easiest change to make is the coach, right? It's harder to go out and get a top goalie because you've got salary cap issues, and then you're going to have to give away some of your young talent.
All right, so blow it up? No, you can't blow it up. But it was Connor McDavid on the way out of town. It's interesting. last week, on the VSiN by the Book show with Super Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis, Paul Bruno appeared, and he had some interesting comments about Connor McDavid's future. Here we go.
I have it on very good authority, Dave. This is a great question. We didn't rehearse this. I have it on great authority that he's coming to Toronto. And the reason is because he is from this area. He was born just a few minutes from where I live, in Richmond Hill, just north of the city. And if you can dig it up on the internet, you can find a meme of the day that he was actually the subject of the lottery win for Edmonton. His reaction captured in that moment was one of absolute abject despair, because the team that was right there with Edmonton as a top contender when those balls dropped the way they did was in fact the Maple Leafs. And he looked like he lost his best friend when the result was shared, because he was excited about the other possibility.
So I'm
very optimistic that he's coming here.
Paul Bruno out of Canada with sources. Connor McDavid's on the way to Toronto. When do you think this would happen? Do you believe what he's saying?
Well, I don't disbelieve that he has sources. I mean, he wouldn't say that if he didn't have sources. I keep hearing Mitch Marner's coming to the Knights from multiple people. I mean, if you can't win, the Canadians can't win a cup, the Canadian teams, you're going to go to a franchise that's been even worse in the playoffs than you, right? And that group, if I'm McDavid, I'm not making that move.
Well, that's like his hometown team, though, right?
Well, okay.
Does he want to go home?
The reason I thought that the Oilers were going to win the cup this year is because in hockey, every superstar gets their cup at some point. And I thought this was the time.
Right.
This guy's going to be the first one.
Could he be the Charles Barkley of the NHL?
Well,
never get the championship.
I think he might,
the NFL.
Huh? I think he might be a little bit better at his sport than Barkley was. I'm just saying it's in terms of superstars. And he's playing with another Hall of Famer on the same line with him in Draisaitl.
Leon Draisaitl's a hell of a player. Sometimes I feel like he's just as good, and sometimes he looks better than
McDavid. He should have won the MVP this year. I can't believe they gave it to the goalie in Edmonton, in Winnipeg. And he wins both the Vezina, Hellebuck, wins both the Vezina and the Hart, but yet wasn't one of the first six players named to the U.S. Olympic team. Think about that.
That's odd. So you think McDavid's future should be in Edmonton, but you don't doubt that he might have some interest in going back home to Toronto.
I guess if that's your dream. But he would have to believe that he has a better chance to win a cup in Toronto than he does in Edmonton. I don't agree with that.
I don't know. It's been so close. In fact, you brought up to game five in Edmonton. I was severely disappointed with a lot of other people that the Oilers were so flat in a series tied 2-2. You got game five at home, and how do you come out that flat and get your butts kicked?
In that building, it's impossible. It's impossible for Florida to dominate that game in that building the way that they did. Which makes, in the end of the day, when we go back and look at it, how did Edmonton come back from 3-0 down in game four in the first? That should have been 6-0 at the end of the first period, right?
Yeah.
And they came back and won that game. That's the most unbelievable thing about the whole series.
So when you look at the series as a whole, I think it became obvious that the coaching edge for Florida was significant. And that's why I said maybe a coaching change. You say, well, I don't know if you can fire a coach when you go to back-to-back Stanley Cup finals. I get that. But when you're getting out-coached by Paul Maurice and the defense is so much better on the Florida side, there are some things that have to change, right? You can't just run it back the way things are.
If you're McDavid and you go to Toronto, now you go into the same division with Florida. Florida's going to be around for a while. You see the space that they have and the draft picks they have the next 3 or 4 years? This team's going to be here to stay.
They're going to lose one of their key guys, I think, after in the offseason, right? I don't know if it's going to be Sam Bennett or who it's going to be, Reinhardt. They're going to lose.
If I was the Stars, I'd go after Reinhardt with all that I could. I don't know what they'd have for cap space because they made a lot of moves this year. But they need that gritty score. That's something the Stars don't have. They don't have that gritty score.
All right, so when you look at the – by the way, did you have any futures on the Florida Panthers? Did you have anything live going to the Stanley Cup final?
So I had a small Edmonton ticket at 11-1. Mm-hmm. So I bet I could have middled myself. I bet Florida minus the game and a half at plus 170. So I would have rather had Edmonton win it, though, at the 11-1 ticket, obviously.
Florida wins 4-2.
Yeah.
How about the Stanley Cup futures market for next season? Who do you think should be the favorite?
Well, I think Florida should be the favorite. They are. Here we have it, Florida and Colorado as co-favorites. Jeff Davis opened it. And then just a tick under them, Edmonton and Carolina, who Jeff Davis loved all year here. They were never not the shortest shot. The Hurricanes were the shortest shot the whole year here.
Carolina got taken out by the Florida Panthers in what, 6 games?
5.
Was it 5?
Yeah, they came back. Yeah. They were up 3-0. They won game 4, and then they were up 2-0 in game 5, but came back and won.
All right, that's Mike Palm on hockey. We'll see if Connor McDavid ends up in Toronto. Would that be next season or would that be 2 years away?
Well, he's still under contract.
He's got one more year.
They would have to trade him for him to be in Toronto next year.
He's got one more year on his deal, right?
Just like Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee, everybody talking about he's under contract. The team controls where he's going to be.
Right. Well, I think the Bucks actually should trade the Freak
and
start rebuilding. They can get a ton in return for the Freak. Edmonton, it's hard to say you should trade Connor McDavid. I'm not going to go that far. Would you?
I would not.
No. All right, before the line moves, Sharp Plays at sharpplays.com is already there. Don't chase the market. They move it. You're not going to outmuscle billion-dollar sportsbooks or full-time pro bettors on your own, but with the Sharp Plays, you don't have to. Powered by cutting-edge AI and trusted insider sources, the Sharp Plays delivers the edge that serious bettors rely on. You get free betting reports, real-time alerts, market-moving insights, all delivered right to you via email or X. This is not some overnight startup. The Sharp Plays has a documented track record going back to 2011 with receipts, public logs, results right there on the site. Sharpplays.com, trusted by the pros, watched by the books. Check them out now at sharpplays.com. All right, we've got Mike North coming up here in about 5 minutes. What a character this guy is.
I'm excited to ask him how excited he is for Ben Johnson because he'll give you a real take on it.
Oh, he will. I think everybody in Chicago is excited about Ben Johnson. Are there any skeptics?
I'm a skeptic, but if you go on air and I do like 4 Chicago hits a week, they want to kill you if you suggest he's not the greatest head coach of all time.
All optimism in Chicago,
it's unbelievable.
Right? All right, Mike North, Chicago sports radio legend, joins the show right after a quick break here. Mike Palm, Matt Youmans, VSiN, follow the money.